Shalom and welcome everybody to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live on the Land of Israel Network and broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome, dear friends. The world is in a nutty place right now, and you're all feeling it, no question about it. The world is in some kind of earthquake, shakeup, some kind of birth spasm. Something's going on right now, and the world is bloody and torn and wild and divided and divisive. And that's why we're broadcasting from our house here with our beloved Malka Fleischer. Malka, shalom.
Shalom. You know, I was going to start this show totally differently.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to be like, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. There's nothing really happening.
Yeah.
It's just like, what do you want to talk about? Which laundry detergent I use? There's nothing to say.
Right.
But that would have been a joke, because the truth is that there's so much to talk about today that we can't even talk about it all.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure we want to talk
That's
about
right.
it all.
That's right.
Because it's painful out there.
Right. Well, one of my colleagues just called me from work and he's like, how are you doing today? And I said, just watching the grass grow, thinking about my grandchildren's education fund.
Yes.
Putting away some money for my grandchildren.
He's going to shine some shoes today.
Right.
Do a puzzle.
Watch the Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show.
I used to love The Muppet Show.
I do not.
When I was a kid, I loved The Muppet
Show.
We agree,
and we agree on so much, Yishai.
Yeah, yeah.
But not that.
For example, this morning you made me a shake.
Yeah.
Which included spinach.
Yes.
Which I'm not a big fan of generally.
Well, that's why I blended it up for you like a little child.
You know what?
It was in your smoothie.
It was good. It was really, really good. I like the word smoothie. It makes you feel good.
It feels
good.
Like it makes you feel
smooth.
Privileged.
Smoothie, yeah. You know, I don't mean any kind of like
in
white
the good way,
privilege.
In the way that we all work hard every day to get to.
I believe
the
in equality
great American
of smoothies
dream.
To all. The great Israeli dream.
I'm just saying, you know, that people can relate to.
What American dream? I'm talking about the smoothie I had
well,
in Judea today.
Well, because we're not, because the reason I say the American dream is because the issue of privilege, I think, is like at the top of the list right now in America, not so much in Israel.
You know, you ever know that you have a friend or a family member who's got like a kookiness going on in life?
Yeah.
And you want to help them because you love them. But then when you get on the horn with them, you get talking with them on the phone.
Yeah.
You're like, after a while, you're like, okay, I want to, like, I now feel like I have exercised my sympathy and what's it called, like, mutual help and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But, like, I now need to back out because the craziness is too much crazy for me.
Yeah.
And, when I look at the scenery in New York and all that, and this is a city that listeners to the show know that I've lived in and thought about, And just to see it all so crazy, it's just like, I just like want to, and it's like you think to yourself, I have enough craziness to deal with. Like when King David went down to the Philistines and acted like a crazy guy. So the king of the Philistines says, don't I have enough of my own crazy people? You know,
for real.
Yeah. And it's just like I think I myself over the last 24 hours, dealing with a lot of craziness from the Israel end.
Yes. We have our own share of crazy. That's
the
truth.
That's what I mean.
We're not going to sit here from our comfy chair in Israel, in beautiful, lush Judea, and be like, whoa, America's got like, thank God we've got this all figured out, because America does not have it all figured out. I think America is actually in dangerously bad shape, but I think that Israel is definitely dealing with it still, as always, dealing with its own like identity crises and power struggles and confusion about how to deal with different policies. For example, my kids are in school, right? Your kids, our kids are in school. But like the coronavirus numbers are rising, and I wake up in the morning now and I'm like, is this even a good idea? There's no new coronavirus, thank God, here where we live. But still, like, there could be, and what if, you know, somebody just hasn't been tested and this and that? Like, am I being responsible to send my kids to school? But at the same time, the government's not shutting the schools, but they have shut certain schools because coronavirus happens to be cropping up in schools because that's where, like, people are coming in contact with each other in a non, like, socially distanced, masky way.
Speaking of school closures, a little building in Jerusalem has been closed today. That's the Knesset.
Oh,
Knesset
snap.
Went down. One of the Arab Knesset members contracted COVID-19 because his driver contracted it and he got exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And now the Knesset is shut down because they're concerned that there's other Knesset members
are going to get it. And then Bibi also had Prime Minister Netanyahu. Yes, I know you're sensitive to that. Prime Minister Netanyahu had an aide who also was tested positive, I think, for coronavirus. And now he doesn't, you know, we're trying to figure out how he's supposed to act. And like the first round of, I think a lot of Americans are still in their like first round of closure. I'm not sure how it works everywhere in America. I guess different states are in different phases. But a lot of people are like still in the no school, still in the no going to work. But Israel, we came out of that. And we like pretty much went back to normal life for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And now that the numbers are coming up, again, we're just like, wait, like how do we do this now? Do we go back into lockdowns? Like the general atmosphere in Israel for sure is that people don't want to go back into lockdown.
When the bear comes out of hibernation,
yeah, you want to like stay out. At the same time, nobody wants to be an idiot. Everybody wants to stay safe and they want their kids to stay safe. And nobody wants to be contracting viruses or passing viruses or anything like that. So it's definitely confusing. Then that's like the small news. The big news is that we have this like little application of sovereignty / annexation, however you like to talk about it, issue. We got the Trump administration, which has like handed us this deal of the century, which turns out to be not such a metziah, as we say, like not such a great deal for the Jews. But it happens to come from an administration which is like the most pro-Israel administration that we've had. With the small exception of possibly Harry Truman, for those who like to debate as to whether Harry Truman's recognition of Israel is perhaps a more pro-Israel moment than all the history of the Trump administration with recognizing officially Israel's sovereignty over Jerusalem, recognizing officially Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights.
Recognizing Jewish rights in Judea and Samaria.
Right, recognizing officially that the Jewish people have rights in Judea and Samaria. Pummeling organizations which have anti-Israel action as like the forefront of their agendas, like UNESCO. So, you know what I mean? It's like we had yesterday, Isha, and you were personally kind of swept up in the whole rigmarole of the aftermath of it. We had a whole thing yesterday because the Judea and Samaria Council head, David Elchayani, who is also like the head of the Jordan Valley, which is really
he's the mayor of the Jordan Valley,
which is really the first thing that's slated to be recognized under a new plan of Israeli sovereignty spreading of Israel annexing, however you want to call it. And he came out yesterday in an interview with Haaretz, which is like a newspaper / publication that many of us like would not want to touch because of their serious anti-Israel leftist slant. He gave an interview to them yesterday being like, Trump is not a friend of Israel because this plan stinks. And they like all of a sudden are like foisting these maps on us of like crazy land giveaways to create a Palestine. And we don't stand for a Palestine. So this plan stinks. We're not doing it. And Trump who's trying to push this down our throat is not our friend.
Right.
And then you had people who were like, yeah, right? He's not our friend because how could he do this to us? You had other people, the vast majority of people, who were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, we don't like this plan. But how could you possibly say that Trump is not a friend of Israel? That's lunacy.
And
then you have people who are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Of course Trump is a friend of Israel and we should do this plan. Because at least we can get something, right? You have a Trump in office. Who knows if we'll ever see anything like this again from the United States. It definitely wouldn't be a Biden, right? And I don't know who would, right now Trump is on the ropes. I mean, I'm not saying that he's not going to win the election, is going to win the election, but like, it's not beautiful over there right now in America. It's really nasty and he could very well be voted out of office. And we need to just like do this application of sovereignty and let the chips fall because we can deal with the aftermath of all that stuff later. In the meantime, we have a president in office who's going to stand behind maybe us and us applying sovereignty to these areas. He's definitely not going to like go down hard on us like other presidents would. So let's just apply some sovereignty, say yes to the deal, and like, well, I don't know what will happen later. We'll take what we can get now.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the camps, and it's a big fat mess, right? Because here, even like amongst the majority of Israelis who are right wing and who believe that we should apply sovereignty to our land, there's a major debate right now as to how to deal with the deal of the century and how to approach President Trump. What do you think, Yishai?
Well, first thing is it's important to also lay out that some people say, and they swear up and down, that the application of sovereignty is not necessarily correlated or related to the deal of the century.
Like
they're saying
we should be doing
sovereignty.
It anyway.
Right. And they say that's actually what they're saying to you. Apply the sovereignty.
Ah.
There's all kinds of rumors flying right now. There's information and disinformation being spread. For example, some statement that actually the Trump administration is going to demand that we renege on any claims of the 70% of the land. But I heard that. Now I've heard from other people saying that is total and absolute malarkey.
Boy.
But I don't really know the truth. And before I say what my opinion is, and I'm working on it, and I'm working with a lot of people because it's a fine line. I think in simple terms, you can fight the, you could do, you could, you've got to push for the three things that you want. Mm-hmm. One, President Trump is a friend.
So that's your position. I want you to tell everybody what's your position on this issue of Donald Trump and the deal of the century.
One, Donald Trump is a great friend to Israel. Two, deal of the century was a bad thing. It was a two-state plan. Too bad that it was written. Now we have to say that we're against it. Three, application of sovereignty is what we should be doing, and the American administration has shown in a few different ways that they're behind it. That's it. And the application of sovereignty should not be dependent exactly on America. It should be something that you do because you believe that you're the sovereign. So apply your sovereignty. And that's it. Like, I'm just saying, look.
How do you explain to people that the deal of the century came out of the Trump administration?
First thing, there's when you're in court, you have to sue for your rights and for what you want, and what will come out is not always the same as pushing for it. But you got to push for what you think is right. I think it's very simple. We have to push to say no for two state, yes for sovereignty. It's like, make it simple. I in general, a lot of times I believe in simplifying things. Like,
certainly in this house, we all stand for the application of sovereignty, and most of our listeners,
right? So apply
too,
sovereignty,
I'm sure, believe, and but, we're interested to hear your opinions. By the way, send an email into Yishai.
YishaiFleischer.com,
or you can tweet us on Twitter.
Or Yishai Glenn of Israel.
We are like, basically, I just want you to know,
a lot of time
that
on Twitter.
We pretty much took a break from our Twitter day in order to talk to you guys today.
It's crazy.
Because like that's like where our little battlefield is right now. Aside from all the work that you're doing behind the scenes, Yishai.
Yeah,
that's where we're at today. If you want to hang out with us,
can I just say?
Oh, and you're back up on Facebook. Your Facebook is all smooth as a
I got
baby's
fixed up.
Bottom.
I got my friend and colleague Yocheved helped me fix up. I had some Facebook problems having to do with my profile that became a page, and then Facebook needed a profile again to manage a page, and it brought up an old profile. All kinds of weird stuff. It was screwing up the system royally.
Right. So now people can see, like, you broadcast, I think, the first half of your show on Facebook.
Oh,
is that
right? Yeah,
yeah. With Rabbi Mike.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So people can go to Facebook and see a beautiful
I'm happy to do a
video.
Little broadcast with you tonight for 10, 15 minutes on Facebook as well. In any case.
So you and Mike are, like, naturally beautiful? So you don't have to like gussy yourselves up for a big video, but
I think it's the opposite. I think you have to like put makeup to take away some of the beauty and shine that you have,
so
that you don't break the computer and the and blind people throughout the world. That would be too radiant.
My eyes.
That's right. It's too radiant.
Ah, look away. That's me.
I want to tell you that.
Speaking of me, I want to talk about Shavuos. Are we ready for talking about Shavuos yet?
I was about to say something. So
go ahead. Was it important about geopolitics?
No. I was going to say that right now, so many people are suffering. There's the COVID virus. There's countries like Brazil and others who are really suffering.
Terrible.
From it. There's people still on ventilators here in Israel and other places. So there's lots of people
and
to pray for.
There's a lot of people who are afraid also.
Yeah.
You know, they're not to mention health-wise, but also business-wise.
Right.
We still don't know what the future is going to be.
So there's that, let's call it a strike against the world. Then there's the riots in America, and it really feels like America is being, I don't know if it's burning, but it's definitely tearing. That's what it feels like to me. And there's two elements that scare me in that. One is that it's bad for that country. And two is that, you know, these things also tend to start to come to Israel afterwards.
Well, they reverberate around
right,
the world.
They reverberate.
Already I saw some like more minor, quote unquote, riots in London, for example.
Right. I find the intersectionality of the Palestinian cause trying to co-opt the Black Lives Matter riots. And by the way, there's now protests in Israel also about Black Lives Matter and all that. Like they had a protest in Tel Aviv. I'm just like, whoa.
I liked the protest in Tel Aviv.
To me, I'm like, wait a minute. God bless that other country. God bless it. But we got our own stuff to.
But you know, there are people, Ishai, if you dig in a little bit to the Israeli news, you'll see that some like Ethiopian influencers are like, where were you guys when we were upset about how we felt that Ethiopians were being treated
right.
in Israel?
That's my point.
No, but I only mean to say like, they're using George Floyd's death for this. But I personally am not upset. If people want to show support for the end of racism against people due to the color of their skin, and they feel in Israel that this is an issue, there are protests. We're very respectful.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on one level, but on another level, you know what disgusts me? It just disgusts me is that it all depends on if it blows up in the media or not. When 1,000 Iranian protesters were murdered
right.
in the streets,
people
murdered
weren't protesting
1,000,
for them.
Not one guy with
right.
a knee.
Just wanted democracy.
Just decent people who were being shot and murdered in the streets. Okay, and like the world didn't say boo on it,
right? Because it didn't suit the agenda.
It didn't suit the agenda, you know.
But to blow up this George Floyd thing suits the media agenda because they can use it to attack Trump, and they can use it to attack conservatism or white people or
privilege.
I mean, not that this is, God forbid, chas v'shalom. I'm not saying that there is not a problem of police brutality, because clearly there is. And I'm not saying that there's not an issue of racism, because sadly there seems to be. But you're right, Ishai, that one issue became huge and one issue did not.
Right. But think about the difference. You have in America a good country, a decent country, a lawful country. There are problems in the system. There are problems. But everybody's been saying it. There's a lot of white people that get shot by police also and all that. And maybe.
But it's definitely true.
There is a racism. And I'm only saying every human being has to be in charge of their problems. And in my region here in the Middle East, we have a lot
we're dealing
with. We have a jihadist regime. We have Hezbollah who's taken over Lebanon more or less. We have Hamas who destroys the lives of Gazan people and seeks to attack us. We have an Iran that suppresses its own people. We have a completely dysfunctional. We have a failed state called Iraq, a dysfunctional situation for millions. There are Syrian refugees, about 2 million of them, on the Syria Turkish border and in Jordan. We have so many horrific human rights crises that are right now raging, and nobody gives a damn about them, but because it suits a certain other agenda over there. So and now folks in Tel Aviv, to me, I cry inside my heart for the 1,000 protesters who courageously stood up against the Iranian regime.
Right.
Nobody gives a damn about them. They stood up and they were like, help us, world. Know about us, world. Know our plight. We're totally subjugated by these.
And instead the world was like, how dare Trump place restrictions and sanctions on Iran.
Yeah, or now, you know, he went into a church and lifted a Bible, blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
Well, it's part of the American sports culture.
That's what I'm saying. It's a game. It's a game, and it's fake, you know, and it's fake.
It's a contest. They love competition.
Right, but to me, I hear the voice of a Syrian lady in Aleppo who had to run with her children and is now living in a camp where they can barely get fresh water. You know, that stuff to me is much more, you know, it's here. It's here in Israel. It's
right.
here in our Middle East. We're responsible for that. This is not like it's only cool because it's cool in the news to make a protest in alignment with the protests in America. Like, okay, it's like a shtick. It's like a thing that's cool right now, and that's what we're doing. It's like, come on, let's be a little bit realer. Let's be a little bit deeper here, and look around in a real way, and not just be total. What's the word? Puppets of the puppeteers who want us to.
It's very hard. It's very hard to not be a puppet. I think it's very hard for the average person, and it's even hard for the not so average person, because in the end of the day, there seem to be not that many people who set the agenda. And so
they're the producers of cool. You know, they're the people who know how to.
And what do you do about that?
I don't know. Be a little bit more discerning. You know, I mean, be a little bit more discerning. There's other more important things.
It's like asking people never to shop at Amazon.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not.
It's
saying
like
that.
It's like, how do you ask people?
I'm not saying
to
that. I'm not saying don't be cool.
And
don't want to be
themselves
cool.
From the main provider.
I don't know what to say to you. I don't have the exact answer for how, you know, people should read situations. I'm just like, step back and take a look at the world. Think locally. Think locally. Like, are there things that you could fix?
That's
and you could
definitely
better, you
true.
Know? I mean, that's the first
and that,
thing.
And that is Jewish wisdom, by the way, which is to first, you're first supposed to, if you're giving charity,
yeah,
you're supposed to first give as locally as possible, and then you spread out. The first concern should be the person next to you.
Put
the oxygen mask on the person sitting next to you.
That's right. Take care of the stuff that's right next to you first, and then go out and worry about things across the globe. The other thing is, like, I don't know. I just don't want to be controlled by both sides. You know what I mean? By both sides, I feel like they're playing this awful tennis game where it's like giants playing a giant tennis game, and we're just like watching, and our heads are like turning this way and this way and this way. It's like a soap opera where it never ends, and you're like watching it. Like, I believe
which is the media's dream, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. Like, sometimes I think to myself,
we're being played.
It's take watching reality TV to another level, right? Instead of you're watching TV, you actually think that you're watching the news.
Right.
And you're actually in a giant reality TV loop.
When it's all been kind of highly produced.
It's produced, and it wants you, even if it's thought out, and all it wants you to do is get back on Twitter and on Facebook and to buy that thing and to go to that protest. And you're like constantly inside the wave of this giant produced thing. That's why there's a part of me that also wants to recommend to everybody to take a deep breath. Look around, see the sunshine, look at your children, you know, enjoy something nice, you know.
We went cherry picking.
Right now in Israel, in our region here in Gush Etzion, there is the cherry trees are given their yield, and it's something unbelievable. And on every street corner here, they're selling these cherries. And if you just eat one of those cherries and you go and think about the molecules and the tastes and the sugars and the tree and how it draws from the ground and how it makes this fruit, and then that's going into your body, and that you're like part of something that came out of the soil and out of these genes of the tree and all the incredible stuff. And just for a second, contemplate that and then thank Hashem, you know, for all that. I'm not saying go totally Eastern here, but I'm saying be careful to not be
keep
totally
your feet on the ground,
right? To be totally dragged into this maelstrom of their created world that they
right.
want you
and
in.
And it's important to continue to live our lives.
Yeah.
It's important to continue to live our real lives. And I think that that's crazy. One of the weirdest things, I think, Yishai, is that it's actually very hard in America right now to do that.
Right.
Because
they've closed you in
you're
the house.
In your house, right? So what else are you going to do? Right. Like, you're going to watch TV and you're going to be on social media. That's what
right.
you're going to do.
Right.
And you're going to, like, order a pizza right. maximum, right? Like, that's what you're going to do. So people are way locked in to what's going on. Plus, I think that since, like, basically the year before Donald Trump was elected to office, when the campaign against him really started to go, right, in terms of trying to get Hillary elected. And up until now, like, the politicking has been so aggressive and angry, and Americans have become aggressive and angry. And they've been pulled in these directions by the media and by Trump, who've been polarizing them. And so now they are exploding, right? The tension is too great, and they're just like, they're boiling over.
Yep. And you said something interesting that maybe these riots will also end up like people will kind of have a reset.
A catharsis. Yeah. I hope that they will have a release. I pray.
Sometimes you have to have a fight club. But the other side is that the other side is not getting to fight back. Like
Chanel did not get to fight back.
Right. Or the kind of gun owning white folks of Idaho. You know what I mean? Like
what do you mean?
Well, they feel like they're under attack, and they kind of aren't really allowed to go crazy. And like sometimes you need a fight club, you know, sometimes you need to bash each other's faces in a little bit and then come out of it.
Yeah.
And like,
I'm not always sure in this case who the fight is between. I know that there is a lot of rage from the black community over the killing of George Floyd and a general sense that they're being discriminated against, and they want to not be discriminated against, and they're mad. I can respect anger, by the way. I don't think that anger is a sin at all. But I don't always understand who the enemy, who the bad guy is on the other side.
The bad guy is the person who wants to undermine the union, undermine the American dream, wants to paint America and the world as this big racist place, instead of seeing that the truth of the matter is that there's been efforts for years and years and years to normalize, and that America is actually a wealthy and good place, and that it should continue, and that you shouldn't try to dethrone your president.
You know, it's interesting. One thing that you're saying makes me think is that, like, you know, a lot of times, like, for example, you have these synagogues
that
in
communism
L.A.
Communism is not the way to go forward. Right. Continue with capitalism.
Right.
Cetera,
that in L.A. you have
that
these synagogues.
That the country should have spirituality and a belief in the Ten Commandments, etc. And that these things are valuable things and underpinning things. The other side wants to undermine that. The other side that uses the anger wants to undermine.
Right, to create anarchy.
They want to create anger. They also want to create a kind of. Related to that is a kind of socialism, communism type thing that wants to take away the natural feelings of religion, the natural feelings of identity.
And they want to really control the people.
Right. So there's
which is what communism is always fascism in the end.
Right. So there's a very serious attack. And as usual, it's only dressed as a human rights, or it's not only, but it is dressed in the language of human rights and liberalism, but it in fact wants to take away a lot of human rights. We see that here in Israel. We see all the time that we're being accused of the intersectionality is real in the sense that it's the same type of argument. They want to say we're abusing the Arabs, we're taking away their rights, but what they really want is they want to take away Israel. They want to take away the Jewish state. They want to take away our identity.
Right. They
our
claim
rights.
They want equality, but that's absolutely
right.
Not what they want.
They want to trample and destroy.
Anyone who thinks that's what they want is
right.
really
there was
really
an article right
themselves.
Now that the head of the BDS movement was like, well, the goal is to destroy Israel. Duh, it's not to get equality. Blah blah blah. It's all that. That's all pretense.
It's a ploy.
Right. So you have to see through those ploys, and on the other hand, not forget that there are some just. Causes on the other side. I mean, so you could say it's a ploy, but that doesn't mean that police
that
should be
people,
brutal.
Yeah, that people shouldn't be treated decently.
Right, but at the other hand, don't say that this whole thing's about police brutality, but allow for total anarchy in the streets where there's much more brutality. So what do you answer with brutality towards, you know, with 10 times more brutality that scares and destroys people's lives? Anyway, listen, I'm telling you, I personally... right now, I want to go just a little bit more zen, just a tad more zen.
It's hard to go zen. Yeah. The world is not zen, and to kind of go zen is ignore the world a little bit.
And by the way, when we say zen, we mean tzen, which is Torah zen, okay? We're not talking about like...
Not om.
Yeah, not Buddha
but
zen.
But rather shalom.
Yeah. shalom. Be the ball.
Well, we just had a beautiful holiday.
We did have a beautiful holiday.
And that was actually when this all started. We all kind of got on our phones and were like, what? We all like after Shavuos,
right.
2 days away from our cell phones, and then we turn on the phone and like the world was burning down.
That's right.
But prior to that, on our Shavuot, we were in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. We had a beautiful time.
Yep.
We went to outdoor shul.
Yes, that's right.
We got together cautiously with friends.
Mm-hmm. In the old city.
I'm sure all of you are dying to know what I made.
I'm just dying to have it again. There was the triple layer cheesecake.
Which one did you like?
Let's be frank.
I made
and honest.
Two. Yeah, go.
There was you did something which was amazing. I asked you for like a pound cake crumble topping on a cheesecake. You did that, but
not pound cake. Pound cake is smooth and dense.
No, but the top has got the crumble. Oh yeah, crumb. Yeah. So then, and our son Elazar asked you for the Jell-O topping. What did you do? You made the bottom crumble, the top Jell-O, the middle cheesecake.
There were strawberries.
Yes, and it was strawberries. It was heavenly. It was really. I was receiving the Torah at Sinai through a cheesecake.
Wow.
Every bite was receiving.
Did you like
great
my
knowledge.
Oreo brownie layer trifle? My cheesecake Oreo cheesecake.
It was quite
brownie trifle.
It was all quite good, and I liked about that is that there were cherries.
Yeah, I put cherries on top.
Yeah, I snuck a few of those.
Yeah,
cherries.
You did, and then I yelled at you.
Yep,
but not real yelling.
No, that's what happened. That's okay. That's okay,
not like Fifth Avenue style yelling.
Right. Yeah, you didn't. It wasn't a riot. We had a discussion where you told me clearly that I was
that
not
you were
to
never
do that.
To do that again.
Yes, so it was a beautiful chag. It was a beautiful chag, and it was Yerushalayim Yer Kodesh. And I really want to wish all of you guys to see you soon here in the good land, and really to get through this period. I remember many years ago I read a book called Slaughterhouse Five by Kurt Vonnegut, and I found the line there, and I haven't been able to find it since. If anybody else can find it for me, that'd be great. I don't know where that book is. But he said something about the Middle East, and he was saying, like, the Middle East, the Holy Land, is really the womb of the world, and it's, like, bloodied and torn, and yet something great is going to come out of it, you know? Whenever I see a world like I see it right now, I think that I want to believe inside my heart, but that's my spidey sense tells me that that a good world is going to, a better world is going to emerge from this chaotic situation.
Well, as religious people, Yishai, we know that Hashem loves people.
Right.
And he loves the world.
Right.
And anyone who wants to get close to him can.
Right.
And that Hashem looks out for the good people.
Yeah. Bezrat Hashem.
Bezrat Hashem. Not that bad things don't happen to good people. That's obviously, as a Jew, it would be ludicrous of me to say that bad things don't happen to good people, given our history. But, you know, we can come out. We can come out of this and we can come out more enlightened. I think that was kind of a little bit what was happening when we were all in coronavirus hunkering down.
Right.
We realized that this is very scary and quote unquote bad, but we can come out of this and be more enlightened people. And I hope that I hope that Israel is using this deal of the century quagmire to get a grip on its priorities and its identity. And I hope that America is too, regarding what's going on, all the upsetness and violence.
Malka Fleischer, I want to thank you so much for being with me. And I myself am just excited for Shabbat. I'm excited for Parshat Balotcha. We're going to talk more about that right now on the Rabbi Mike segment, because I'm going to reverse the segments today.
What?
That's right. Today I decided to reverse the segments. I want to tell you.
Oh my gosh, I'm honored.
I want to tell you also that this Torah portion is filled with dissension and mini rioting.
Ooh.
And it's really like the beginnings of the political turmoil of the book of Bamidbar. There's a triad here, which is this parsha, Balotcha, Shlach, and Korach, which are all about challenging leadership and riots and against God, and God's firing back. And it's really
wow.
Very, very akin to what's happening right
Does
now.
Does it work out?
It works out, but not without pain. There are people lost. There are people being struck. There's quail coming down. People are like, quail! And then again,
wait, what are they like?
They're like, quail, and they like, then the quails are like, wow, and then they get eat the quail. They get smashed for eating the quail. It's like there's a lot of intensity, and it's, to me, it's like the quail is a little bit like looting, you know. It's like you get something that like you're not really supposed to get, and it's and it smashes you at the end, and it's there's something poisonous about it all, and so there's an intensity out there in these Torah portions. This is a super intense Torah portion. I'm telling you, it really has everything that's happening today in the world is in Baalotcha, which is an amazing, one of my favorite Torah portions. I love this book of Bamidbar. It's one of my, it's just, I'm a big Bamidbar guy. And that's because it's also my birthday, area of my birthday.
Oh,
so it has something to do with my mental
birthday.
State. In any case, folks, I want to thank you very much. We've gone a long time, Malka. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thank
and
you,
lots
you
of
too.
Love. Lots of safety to you, Malka.
Thank you. Same to you. And lots of success to
yes,
you, Ishai, and
yes.
all of your holy endeavors.
Amen. Thank you. And isn't it such an honor to even be part, even a small part, of God's great great plan, his works. As I've always said, our rabbis, our sages say, better to be the tail of the tail of a lion rather than the head of the foxes, right? And I say, if you're going to be the tail of the lion, wag it, okay? That's what I always say. If you're going to be the tail of the lion, just wag it and be a happy tail of the lion. What a great schut it is. And what a great schut it is to be with you. Write me an email, Yishai at YishaiFleischer.com or Yishai at thelandofisrael.com. Check out my website, YishaiFleischer.com, and check out your ability to support our spreading of Torah, our efforts here in the land of Israel on many levels. So go to YishaiFleischer.com/donate. Check out our friends, the great privilege that I have to work for the Hebron Fund, HebronFund.org. That's where you can get a tour with the forefathers and mothers and connect to them always and support the fathers and mothers and really do your part of Kibud Avaim, honoring the fathers and mothers, and Tchelet, which is the ability to really be a revolutionary modern Hebrew coming into Zionism, which is the national liberation movement of the Jewish people. The colors of that don't run.
These colors don't run.
That's right. And they are the Tchelet colors, the blue and white, but you can wear it proud, not just on the flag, but on your body, and really be part of the godly people. That's the colors that God chose for us. And that's it. So stay tuned for Rabbi Mike Foer and Malka Fleischer. God bless you.
Thank you, Ishai.
And I'm looking
Only
forward
good news next week.
Amen, amen, amen. I'm looking forward to cheesecakes next year as we receive the Torah yet again here in Zion and spread it out to the world. Shalom, everybody. Stay tuned. Rabbi Mike is next.
One who doesn't respect and value his past is not worth the honor of the present and has no right to a future. Well, I promise you that I respect and value the past, and I, please God, would love to see honor in the present, and I know that all of us have a right to the future. I'm Rav Mike Foer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Join Rav Mike Foer for the best Jewish history podcast, The Jewish Story, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
All right, everybody, shalom and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting on the Land of Israel Network, on my Facebook page, and on the YouTube channel called Eye on Zion. So shalom, and shalom to all of you folks. Looking forward to chatting with you as you join the stream right now on Facebook and on YouTube and maybe on other mediums, and we look forward to your comments. Please leave the comments in the chat so we could post them on the screen. And discuss the issues that are interesting to you. And we have with us today, Rabbi Mike Foer is going to be joining us in a second. Our conversation today is going to be about COVID, about riots, about sovereignty, and what I call cloudy with a chance of quail, which is the Torah portion of Baalotcha. Rabbi Mike Foer joins me. Rabbi Mike, shalom and welcome.
I love it. Cloudy with a chance of quail. I love it. How are you
cloudy with a chance
can
of quail.
Can I be pedantic? Can I be pedantic for a moment?
Yes.
Other media. As a media personality. Don't say mediums.
That's right. Okay, very good. So that's right. So the Torah, we cannot have that from Torah. And I just want to show you that I have a feature that I really like a lot, which is I can show other people's comments. And here's Shlomo Algera, my good friend, saying shalom from Givat Zuba, which is here in Gush Etzion. So shalom, a good friend Shlomo, and shalom to everybody. Please join us, Rabbi Mike Foer. You're an educator at the Pardes Institute, and you're also the creator of the Jewish Story podcast on the Land of Israel Network, and that's found, all that stuff is found on your other website, which is jewishstory.co. I just posted it. And thank you so much for joining me today for a conversation about very timely issues I'm always cautious to not over accept the sensationalization that the media's might impose on a scene that they want to portray a certain way.
because I mean,
in Israel, like, yeah, as settlers, we don't want to buy into that too quick.
That's right. That's exactly right. And oftentimes when I'm in the United States, I look on what's happening here in Israel through their lens, and I'm like, that is not the reality. The reality is much more that we're buying diapers and milk in the store, and not that we're being terrorized or nuclear Iran is coming down the pipes. So I know to try to filter out like a media exaggeration, a type of bias that seems to me a bit exaggerated. At the same time, we are also not on the ground here in the land of Israel. We're not on the ground in America. And as I'm looking towards America right now, it's certainly, you know, as the media calls it, America, you know, is on fire. There are riots in the streets, 200 cities, and we're seeing so many of these videos of looting, of glass breaking. And this on top of the COVID-19 crisis, and you're really seeing that great country in a heap of some kind of we've talked for a while that they're under some kind of emotional turmoil, but now it's gone physical.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, my brother lives in Brooklyn. He had such an Israeli comment the other day. I asked him, called him up, how are you doing? What's going on? He said, is your neighborhood on fire? He's like, no, the rioting's a couple blocks away.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh. That's, you know, sounds so familiar. It's like, no, as long as you don't go over there, it's fine. You know? The pain, I think that the pain is very important to sort of keep focused on here, because of course there's rioting, but there's also protest.
Right.
And I was trying to explain to my children the other day the difference between a cause and a trigger. I mean, the murder of George Floyd was a trigger for what's happening right now. So but the cause is much deeper and frankly bigger and more difficult to engage, which is why sometimes there's a desire to just sort of give into unchecked rage. I'm not talking about the looters. I want to be clear. Anybody who's out there stealing things right now is just a thief. Period. In my opinion, throwing property.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Now looting, they're clearly thieves, but the question is, were they thieves yesterday? Or does a situation allow for some kind of atmosphere where norms are broken?
No, that's proven. That's proven that people who are otherwise law abiding or at least too scared to act on those impulses. Yeah. When the bounds are loosed, all kinds of things come out. No, right.
It's,
no question.
It's important to say that law abiding is oftentimes fear of the law, right?
The Mishnah says, pray for the welfare of the government. Without it, people would swallow each other alive. And you're seeing it right now. But my point is that I think it's really important for us as Jews, as Israelis, as human beings, to not miss the underlying pain, which is a result of the real causes and not just the trigger. I explain to my kids, if I build a huge fire on the side of this, build it, don't light it, soak the wood in gasoline and oil and then just walk away. Some guy who's smoking a cigarette flicks his butt, jerk, right? Lands in it. Well, he started the fire, but he's not really the cause.
Right. In this case, though, there are, it seems, also depends on which media you read. There may be other elements there. I'll give a great example. My mom, by the way, my mother is with us right now. She says, shalom from Jerusalem. So, you know, I was raised in a house where I understood myself to be a type of feminist. Mm-hmm. I understood that I was interested in seeing my mother and my sister flourish intellectually and otherwise, and basically saw them as I never thought the other thought, you know what I mean? And only later did I have to associate that with a movement. But it was right. Obvious to me that this was a kind of it wasn't even empowerment. It was the norm that men and women
are. It was an egalitarian assumption.
Right. It was an egalitarian assumption. Let's call it that way. Again, even that word doesn't come into play when you don't know the other side. But in time, it turns out that feminism that I understood, which is empowerment of women and egalitarianism, turned into something very different when what I understood or understand as Marxist feminists, a type of group that wants to split between, cause tensions within society, and instead of class warfare, wants to make it gender warfare and later on ethnicity warfare,
It's identity war now. I mean, take
identity war in general.
What the standard of measure is.
Right. So, but they'll take a theme that's really there, piggyback on it, and take it to a completely different conclusion. Instead of women's rights, it's actually a splitting between women and men, splitting up the family, and a kind of tension that's created artificially on purpose in order to undermine societal stability. So too, you see right now, there maybe is an underlying cause, but the people who want to exploit this moment are varied. Some want rights. Others want anarchy. Others want to dethrone Trump. And others want to see a Marxist socialist turnover, turning the United States into an Argentina or something. So you are seeing a lot of people throw in their hat into this fight.
Yeah, you know, let's go with the feminist model, because I think it's clear in the way you played it out is that one has to differentiate between personal violence and structural violence in this case. Like, and that's one of the big switches in like the fourth wave feminism, this later phase that you're associating, I think, more or less correctly with Marxism, although there's more to the story there, is that the feminism you experienced growing up was about individuals feeling empowered to actualize themselves, right? The later stages of feminism, without saying rightly or wrongly, began to focus on the structures which intrinsically kept women out, however you define out. And that's why, as you said, it looked to break up the family structure. Because frankly, you could hear an argument that the need within the family structure for women to bear children limits their potential, keeps them in a position of oppression, et cetera, et cetera. Right? Okay, I could hear that. Right? But what you're identifying is a social structure, which I didn't do this to you. I personally am not exercising that violence. It's built in. And so what's happening right now is that the intellectual world, which is, and it's important. I'm not saying I agree with that evaluation or every conclusion drawn from it, but it's important to notice that, and this is what the deep potential positive, which can come out of what's happening in America right now, is America, and we could make some jumps to here as well, needs to look structurally. The goal here is not to have nicer police, although that's an important outcome. It's certainly, you know, but that's not the goal. The goal is to ask the deeper question, how is it that the number of black men in America incarcerated is so disproportionate to their representation in the population? How is it that you can look at the population distribution within American cities and see very clear racial divisions between city, suburb? I mean, like, strikingly clear. And by the way, some of these answers are actually quite easy to answer. I'm not going to go into it now because it's not the time or place. But you understand what I'm saying is that the problems America faces today are structural problems. They're problems rooted in the history of slavery.
It's also that the country itself is a type of experiment, a social experiment on its own. I don't think it's so clear the answers because you've never really had a country that tries to smush everybody together and give them equality, as opposed to Israel, which is an ethnic national state, or a Hungary or a Poland. You have a very unique idea there, which is like there is no identity or nationality. It's based upon an idea and a dream. And then when you have a breakdown of that idea dream,
Listen, that sounds nice, man. But the reality is America has always been based on an ideal dream, which is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male from the beginning. Okay. That's what's always.
You're saying it's a white Christian country, so then you could understand that black people in African Americans are not as comfortable there,
as comfortable. How did they get there?
Huh?
How did they get there? How did all those African Americans end up in America?
Slavery.
Right. But my point is that structurally America is built around that. And unless there's a positive engagement of that reality, the union will fly apart at the seams.
Okay, but I'm saying that might indeed happen. I don't foresee that.
All empires end. I'd rather not see it go down that way. But yeah.
Well, I'm not even talking about the empirical aspect. I'm talking more about the, as you said, the structural country aspect of it.
That's an empire. It's United States of America.
Right, right, right. Okay. I'm saying empires past its borders.
You spend most of your time in America in the Northeast, buddy. You spend a little time west of the Mississippi, and you'll understand the federal government in a very different way.
Right. Absolutely. I hear that. That is true.
Or south of Mason-Dixon, for that matter. Anyway,
I think I'm not, you know, a lot of my kind of conservative colleagues are big Reagan fans. I myself am not such a big Reagan fan, but there is one phrase that he said, which I think is eminently true, which is that it takes one generation for the ideals of America to be undermined. Here in Israel, it's not the same. You can have generations and generations of people who didn't have a sense of Zionism, but when it gets triggered, since it's so deep in our collective unconscious, since it's so deep.
It's got its roots in a culture 3,000 right. plus years.
Right, I mean. There's so many layers. Like you can do it as Hebrew nationalism, or you could do it as God's word, or you could do
right,
it
messianism,
as
messianism. You can there's cultural. Like, yeah.
Right. Like I sometimes wonder at myself. I look at myself and I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like I like read Jewish history, then I read Torah. I read this kind of Torah and that kind of Torah, halachic Torah, midrashic Torah.
And then you read the news.
Right. And then I read the news and it's all one. It's all one issue. Right, and it's you know, like when you're an American, it's not as binding. It's not as binding. I want to tell you a quick story that I saw. Two family members of mine. I was in America, maybe last summer, and I saw two family members of mine from different parts of the country. One watches CNBC, the other one watches Fox, and these are old friends, and they were unable to speak to one another, and the F-bomb started flying. Within 2 minutes of them sitting down with one another and haven't seen each other physically in 6 months, they just went right at it. I thought to myself, if two Jewish men who have been successful, who are both pro-United States, both capitalists, by the way, both pro-Israel, who have a similar life trajectory, cannot sit and talk. So that means that there's something very problematic in the conversation that the United States is having. Now, listen, I want to tell you something. Whenever we get too far into what's happening in the United States, I feel this kind of like if you notice my commentary on Twitter, I don't really touch the United States issues so much. Not because I don't have an opinion, but because I don't feel like my opinion is important. There are more informed opinions. And my personal mission is to help build up our country, Israel. That's my life goal. And what's happening in America is not my life goal.
Can I say something about that?
Go ahead.
Just one thing, and we don't have to get all the way into it if you don't want to. I think, therefore, what's happening in America right now needs to be a wake-up call for us as we look toward sovereignty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because we, if we don't consider very seriously the power of structural violence, or the potential, by the way, of structural justice, you know, it doesn't have to all be negative, right? We risk creating a situation now because we have the strength to do it, that our children's children will pay the bill for it. What you're seeing in America right now is a historical bill come due.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to think about that. Not, by the way, I'm not only in favor of sovereignty, I'm in favor of doing it now. Let's just do it. But it needs to be done both in a way and with a mindset that there's a huge responsibility to every human being that lives between the Jordan and the sea, who lives within our land. And that we need to take that seriously, not just toward them, but within ourselves.
All right. So let's go. Let's give some examples of sovereignty. So some of my colleagues, and I'm having a very vociferous debate with, you know, the Judean Samaria people, the West Bank people, and the pro-Jews living in these parts. So they say, you know, one of the contours of the plan is that a potential Palestinian state would be demilitarized. And right. I say to them, that is a total joke. The Arab cities in Israel, Arab Israeli cities, are already highly militarized with tons and tons and tons of weapons being snuck in. So if
right, they don't have tanks, but they've got automatic right, weapons.
Right. So while we can talk a lot about, you know, creating, God forbid, in my opinion, a Palestine on our ancestral homeland, and we pay lip service to demilitarization, first thing, I have two problems with that. One is, can we just ask a simple question? Do or do not the Palestinians deserve a state in this land? Just answer that simple question. Yes or no? For me, the answer is no. I don't believe that anybody has a right for self-determination in our land. And they could be very naughty or very nice. Lo mañanote does not interest me one way or the other, because it's not about a valuation of their niceness or not niceness. And so
that would have to do with the residency.
What's that?
I would say the question of naughty or nice is a question of residency,
mm-hmm.
not one of sovereignty, like self-determination. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning naughty people don't belong here. If they're naughty Jews, we'll deal with them internally as Jews.
Okay. So you're taking to the next step. You're taking to the next step, which is I think what you're asking is, if the above answer is no, then what is the role of non-Jews in the land of Israel? What status and what role do they have? I really feel that people have not defined it. I think you're absolutely right. I feel that people do not have a definition in their head that works, that they can understand what Arabs, who let's say are pro-Israel, non-jihadists, what is their status in Israel?
Or even, by the way, they don't have to be pro-Israel. They just need to be pro-life.
Pro-law.
Yeah, pro-law. That's what I mean by pro-law. Right. You know, like in the American sense. But like, you know, and I'll go further. It's not just that people don't have a clear idea. It's that we have run from that question since the earliest moments of the Zionist movement. Now, in the beginning, it was, I think, important to run from that question because the reality was so overwhelming. Like the idea that a few Jews were going to come in the midst of, it wasn't such a huge population, but certainly it was more than the Jews, right? And just like, okay, we'll work it out. That's basically what they said. They punted. You know what? God bless them that they punted. Otherwise, they would have folded. But that's what I mean. That created a historical debt.
Right.
And we're holding that debt right now.
Right.
And if we punt, you see what's happening in America right now? It doesn't hold a candle because America is not surrounded by supportive nations that are supporting the active agents for its destruction from within.
Right.
Like, we can't punt right now. We need to own this one and win the game.
Right. And I would rephrase what you're saying from my understanding that Israel is in a point where you have to shed a certain skin that was created in the 40s and certain structures that were created to match the population and the size and the power and the relative strength of Israel. Those were institutions created then. They have to shed now and become something much bigger. And I want to give one specific example. I'm very bothered by some of the sovereignty discourse that's happening now. And what's bothering me is that there is this – I remember today that when Ben-Gurion decided to announce that we are going for Israeli independence, that we are declaring independence. Right, declaring a state an independent state, he did that against the will of most countries and even against the United States of America.
And against the will of many of his colleagues.
And against many of his colleagues. But he said, this is the moment and we've got to be chazak and people will follow us even later. Down the line, they'll accept us. So too, in I think 1982, Begin decided that he saw what was happening in Syria and he decided it's right now we have to assert full sovereignty over the Golan Heights. He did it in a surprise fashion. The Americans were far from knowledgeable about what his plan was. He sprung it on them, and they were upset with him, just as they were upset with him also for the Osirak bombing. But he did it, and then people later on accepted it and later on even thanked him for it. Okay, right now we have a situation where we're talking about sovereignty of the heart of our heartland, and it's like – Are you with me? We're looking behind our shoulders, looking to see if America is exactly going to match our assertions of sovereignty. And it bothers me atmospherically. It is not sovereignty when you are dependent on somebody else to recognize it. That is not sovereignty. Sovereignty is not the recognition of sovereignty. Sovereignty is when you are a sovereign and you say, this is my land and I assert it on these for this law, these rights and these rights. You call it natural law, call it history, call it Bible, call it purchase, call it war, call it all these things. And then it would be nice if people acceded to that, to what I've done, but it doesn't depend on that. Nobody can give you your freedom.
Right. Well, listen, I think that the deeper problem, I think that the that looking outward is a posture, like you said, which is inherited from an essential aspect of Zionism, this sense that even Ben-Gurion, with all of his courage and sort of like chutzpah, azdus kedusha, as we say, you know, like holy chutzpah, still felt very strongly that the project here could not survive without an international patron.
Right.
And I did this in my last episode the 6 Day War.
The Six Day War.
I asked my clickbait title when I posted it was, what was the fundamental flaw in the Zionist project? I got called a Jew hater for the first time, by the way, this week.
It was nice.
I've been called a lot of things, and perhaps deserved many of them. But my point was exactly what you're saying, is that at a certain point, Zionism was an incredible project which achieved amazing things. But don't forget, yesterday's solution becomes tomorrow's problem like that. If you're wedded to the way you solved the problem as opposed to the fact that you solved it, and you're not willing to grow and evolve, like you so nicely said, shed that skin, especially in this situation, which I agree with you, where we're being called to step into a gadlut, a bigness.
Right.
And by the way, that bigness, I think at this point, hinges on the role of the non-Jew within our society. It's not a secondary question, because the other pieces, I think partially this looking for the international backer is a bit of a red herring. Because the reality is that we don't have consensus as an Am. We don't even have like a clear vast majority as an Am that this is the right thing. I think a lot of people feel it. Like, oh, duh. I mean, this is where we're from. But we're afraid because the way in which we have related to the Arabs that live in this land up until now, rightly, troubles many people. Because we've related to them as a problem to be solved. And a sovereign who relates to other human beings as a problem to be solved, it doesn't usually end well. What we need to begin to do is relate to them as a responsibility to be taken. Now, what that looks like, as you know, I'm wide open on that. Like what it looks like in its legal models, what it looks like in its social models. I think that it's the 21st century people. Let's experiment.
I want to give another story that has happened now in the news. It's broken and also something that I've seen myself. But before I do that, I just want to to point out some of the comments. First thing, we have Marie says shalom from the UK. Hi, Marie. Hey. Yehudit Shamroth, very strong feelings. She says it doesn't matter if they were thieves yesterday; they are criminals now. All right. Shakim says the world is burning, disaster everywhere.
Well, I disagree. I mean, right. It's actually things are good here, even for those Arabs who don't have it as well as you and I.
Right,
they're still pretty good.
Yeah, many of those Arabs have it better than you and I. Let's also be frank about that. There's a lot of wealth in our country,
for sure.
Barry says, yes, an extra day in Samaria before November. God forbid, if the Democrats get in, they will pressure Israel.
Well, that's a certainty. Although in many ways, it might be better off. I'll tell you. I think we as a nation function better when we're in opposition to power than when we are, like you're sensing, when we have this posture of subservience to it.
Yeah, it really bothers me. It really bothers me. I want to tell you something, Rabbi Mike. I don't know if I can explain myself exactly well because it's also like a kind of feeling. And I am amazed at my fellow pundits and commentators and activists and political people. I cannot believe how quickly we went back into shtetl. I think it's so natural for us that people don't even notice that they're in shtetl. They don't even know it. They themselves.
You want to speak out? You mean by going back into shtetl?
Yeah, yeah. This whole thing of waiting for American recognition for the sovereignty. There's something about it which the way people are speaking about it is this subservient kind of modality, subservient mode and atmosphere, which we didn't have under Obama. Obama, God bless him, brought out a lot of this ire and this chutzpah, this pissed offness. And they were like, hey, man, we are freaking Israel, okay?
We're free people in our land.
You're not going to tell us what to do. And suddenly, like under our friends, which I do very much respect and appreciate and am quite thankful to them and to God for the great things that they have done. But the mode of like actually going underneath them, and I also blame some of the people in that administration, some of the Jews in that administration who like that. They're kind of these, well, like
the court Jew is the embodiment of the
state. Right. But you know, they're a doubly kind of court Jew. They're not like a, they're not, they're an empowered court Jew.
Court Jew in many,
right. In many ways, they're lawyers on steroids. Okay. And there's something.
That is the history of the court Jew. The court Jew was, you know how a court Jew became a court Jew? He had one role vis-a-vis the king. I provide.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. I provide.
Okay.
And I'm good at it.
Right.
Because I provide in a way that nobody else can. Like you said, lawyers on steroids. I solve problems. I get what you need. I find the guy.
I get it done.
And because of that, you'll
that's
do
what
for
I mean.
Me.
Right. And I got to tell you something. I don't think that you can have There's remember when the lightsabers like zap one another when they get too close to one another, like, yes. Yes. Right? It's like you cannot have a super empowered court Jew. And I don't want the word court Jew sounds a little negative. I don't know.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, but I don't mean it in a negative sense. I think that there are in times of history people like Nehemiah. Nehemiah to me is one of the great heroes.
Can I explain to you why I think it's intrinsically negative and why I think it does? You don't mean it to be insulting, right?
Right.
But I'll tell you why. The bottom line, the difference you're speaking about is who owns the context, right?
Right.
Where is the Malchut? Don't forget, our vision of redemption is Ya'alu Moshe b'Hatzion lishpat et Ar Esav, right? That we're going to stand on Mount Zion and we're going to judge Esav. You don't judge someone who owns the context. That means you or God is holding the context. And that's the challenge we're facing right now. Is America really the power of the world? In which case, we're still in the shtetl on some level because when they whistle, we come or we get whacked. Are we willing to step into a world where truth is, it's not true anymore? And we have an opportunity to help the world to come to a realization of a higher power through our sovereign actions. That's always our mission. Our sovereign actions are never just for ourselves. Please, Am Yisrael, anybody who's listening, don't forget that. Our sovereign actions are not for us. They are for
Shaolam. You got exactly what I was trying to get at. And I would go deeper into it right now, but we are low on time. Yeah, we got to hit the Parsha. And interestingly enough, the Parsha has a lot of themes that are similar because there's themes of really this is the Torah portion, this one and others. Maybe there's, in my opinion, there's a kind of triad of Balotcha, Shlach, and Korach, which are the rebellion Torah portions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The political rebellion Torah portions. These are the three.
Alternative leadership, alternative vision.
Right, alternative leadership and a questioning of the leader as well, specifically a questioning of the leader. But before we get to that, let's just touch one more thing that's happening right now, which is COVID is still around and making its rounds again. Israel posted its highest rate of tachlua. How do we call that? Getting sick, infection. Highest rate of infection. In many weeks was yesterday, something like 119 new sick people, excuse me. And they're considering, there's talk about the schools being closed. So this thing is still.
Both my daughters' high schools are closed already.
Uh-huh.
I took my eldest to get tested for COVID this morning.
Uh-huh.
They're testing her entire school because the teacher was found sick.
Wow.
Yeah, and don't believe everything you read in the news, because I saw they announced, five high schools have been closed. It's interesting. I looked. Neither of their schools were on there.
Mm-hmm.
They're both closed.
Speaking of COVID, we have a comment here from our good friend Erica from sunny Sweden. Great to be part of the pod live.
I'm glad that Sweden is sunny. I would actually never have put those two words together.
That's right. Today's sunny Sweden, and that's really good. Louise says, we must assert our rights boldly. Matter of factly, and not ask the world for permission. Okay, you get what I'm saying. Good. Amir says, big hug, Rabbi Flesh. It's my buddy Amir, who I thought was gone from this world, and I'm so happy to see him. We have from Stockholm. Look at this. This is great. We got a whole we got a whole Sweden thing going on. And then we have but Barry says something different. He says the Arabs aren't Israel's responsibility. There are many Islamic countries. He's saying this as opposed to, I think, what you said.
Yeah.
Which is he's saying, no, it's not our problem. But I think, Barry, what I think you might agree with, it's not the Arabs, it's the residents of the state of Israel, which is...
My point is, it's definitional to sovereignty that everyone who lives within your country is your responsibility.
Right.
The idea that everyone gets treated the same is the like liberal Western notion, which may or may not be relevant here, but doesn't change the element of responsibility. I'm not a fan of treating people as problems, certainly not as a category of people.
Ian says hi from Australia, and I love these little flags that people are putting up. It's a lot of fun. And Barry says, your point about Obama, didn't he prevent Israel from bombing Iran's nuclear facilities? Maybe not so good to have opposition. Yes, there was definitely
complicated, for sure.
Yeah, it was complicated. But the atmosphere was, you know, like we'll show you. That's right. And we gained a lot of a sense of ourselves during the Obama period.
But I think it's
sadly, and I don't think that President Trump wanted this, but I can sense that there's a certain erosion of that sense of self because of the and this is what I meant by shtetlness. I'm not even so sure sometimes that the power, the host or whatever it is means it. But we go into like back underneath the mask.
There's a whole story to be told there, which you can piece out in the Jewish story if you want, about the relationship, or let's say the effect of absolute power on Jewish posture. There's a close relationship between the rise of absolute power in Europe and the role of the Jews. And it's not a pretty one.
Right. Steve Brown says, can you talk about the protests and riots in America? Steve, we did that in the beginning of the program, and we have to move on to a different kind of riot.
Any promise, my hope is to put out a podcast on that tomorrow.
Right. Just one more thing. Shlomo Algera, a good friend of mine, says, sovereignty in Area C is a good start. Eventually, we will be able to apply more sovereignty later. My concern is some of the right-wing parties will vote against the bill. They're not going to vote against the sovereignty bill. The right-wing parties in opposition, they're not going to vote against the sovereignty bill. The question is there linkage between sovereignty / annexation and the two-state plan, which is what the deal of the so-called deal of the century is, which is a two-state plan, which offers 70% of the land to the Palestinians at the end of the day. If there's no linkage between those two things, great. If there is a linkage, which I thought there was, but a friend of mine was trying to convince me that there isn't, then we have to be concerned about it. Okay,
I would add to that one more thing, which is that when Naftali Bennett last week said what we want is maximum land, minimum Arabs. First of all, I appreciate his honesty.
Right.
And the second of all, notice that what you're doing is you're punting, because you're just going to squeeze these people into an ever small. They're human beings. They're not going to just sit there. If you don't take responsibility for that, whatever that responsibility looks like, you're just punting a problem down the field that our children will get in the face. Look at what's happening in America.
Yeah, and that is a very shtetly phrase.
Yeah, it's like, we're not this, we're not that.
Right. It's like I will shrink my borders to have me inside the shtetl, me and my kind, and outside of the shtetl is outside the shtetl. But that's not the language of the Malchut,
where everything within my borders is my responsibility.
Right.
And I will do with it as I think is right.
Right. So I just want to tell you something. You know, you remember you had that period was it during the beginning of COVID, but you were binge watching the Marvel movies that you like?
Yeah. It was before COVID, to be honest with you. I was injured in my knee. Yeah,
so. I recall now. So I don't usually fall into binge watching anything.
No,
I really don't. I just don't. But I have other ways to waste my time. But
have you stumbled? Do you want to talk about it?
I stumbled. I fell. My good friend Jake, my very, very good friend Jake, wanted me to watch this show called The Last Kingdom, which is about what are they called now? This is a fight for England in the kind of early Middle Ages between
Saxons,
the Danes.
And the Saxon norm?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the Danes and the Saxons.
Yeah.
Saxons and Danes.
Okay. And he really, told, really he says to me, Yishai, you got to watch this because you got to watch how the folks are thinking about power and about sovereignty and about, you know, and how to kind of understand the other. It's really a show about others. The central character in the middle is, on the one hand, a Saxon, but he was adopted by the Danes, and he goes back and forth. I in no way to recommend anybody to watch the show. But it really did put a more warlike thinking in my head, and a more kind of understanding of a grip over people. So anyway, I got a little bit sidetracked in the last few days around this. Let's shift gears, shall we? Yeah. Let's move away from the Saxons and into, that's right, the Torah, which is we have plenty of our own drama and problems. And
they're in the Torah.
The Torah, we're talking about the Torah portion. Let me just bring it up. First thing, my good friend Dan Masri says, Jews sojourning in Boca Raton love Yishai and Rabbi Mike. So thank you very much.
Thanks,
okay. Now like we have sojourning. That's right. We have a Torah portion. I know it's here. It's called Parshat Ba'alotcha. Here it is. I put it up on the screen. Ba'alotcha. And it starts off innocently enough, but not really, even from the get-go. It says when you put up the menorah candles, sorry, I'm just turning it. The book is the book of In the Desert, or what we call it, Numbers. It's a long Torah portion, and it's chapter 8. And it starts off by saying when you put up the seven candles, put them, they will be lit seven candles, right? And the Kohen is in charge of beautifying these candles. And that's your job is to make sure that they're lit every single day and that they're relit. And the Torah doesn't say a lot about it, but then it says, oh, and did I mention that the menorah has got to be made out of one piece of gold, one big piece of gold. It's got these flowers. It's got these, fruit parts. It's got these, cups. It's got different parts that make up the menorah. The menorah is hard to describe famously. Even Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time understanding its description.
Again, guys?
Right. But the Torah portion starts with the menorah.
Yeah.
Here's what it looks like, and here's the guy to take care of it and light it. It's not just a thing. It's got to be lit. It's got an action on it.
Like an avoda, right.
Right. Okay, and now it starts nice enough. It's about light, and it's about, you know, interestingly enough, right from the get-go, there's a jealousy here. Mm-hmm. Rashi says that Aaron saw Aharon, a Kohen, the Kohen Gadol, saw that the other heads of tribes were bringing all these gifts to the Mishkan, and he got jealous of them. He's like, well, what's my role in it? And God says, well, your role in it is this menorah that's an eternal thing. It's an eternal light. And the Ramban famously says, wait a minute, why didn't you talk about the korbanot and the other stuff?
Right.
And the Ramban's answer is, even when there's no korbanot, there's going to be your children, the Maccabees, the Hasmonean kingdom. We're going to rise up against their oppressors, and they're going to light that menorah. And that's your folks. That's the warriors that are priests, and that they will light that menorah in the temple even in dark times.
Which, I mean, it's interesting. Of course, we have all ourselves remember that through the lighting of the menorah in our homes, the Chanukiah. And that's that place where, even though I'm not a Kohen, you're not a Kohen, we're not the children of Aaron, we're the children of Israel. Nevertheless, we're stepping into our role as Mamlechet Kohanim, as a nation of ministers to the world, of priests, as the emissaries from God to the world. And our job, of course, is to spread light, right? That's the way we're meant to do it.
So this Torah portion starts with the spreading of light, but the rest of the Torah portion is going to have quite a bit of efforts to put down that light.
Which, right? Is the sign that it was working.
Right.
Never forget that. Is it people ignore you? You're not doing anything.
All right. So we had the lamplighters. That's the Kohanim and the fighters for that light. And then there's another group of lamplighters. That's, we've talked about it many times. I don't want to go too deep in it, but that's the folks who asked for Pesach Sheni. They asked for a reprieve, a second chance in order to do what they missed. And there's a few things there that happen. One is that Moses says, stop, and God will tell you the answer. Not tell me, but it will come through me, but I won't even say that. I'm giving you God's answer. And that says something about Moses and his ability to hear God at any time. And it also shows, Rashi tells us, that some people have the merit of bringing down new Torah when they ask for it. And that a Torah that was not yet revealed came through their merit, their willingness to ask God about the new Torah. And so these are also lamplighters. comments.
You know, I'm not so sure which one's the light, because, you know, there's two pieces. There's the content, and then there's the will. Meaning, they like you love to say about Pesach Sheni, God's showing you there's always more content. But it's dependent upon the will. And so which ones, normally we think of the light as the thing that shines out from the menorah. But the truth is, if you don't do the act of lighting it, that light will never come. And so when you look back at Bahalotcha, the original statement, there's a beautiful statement that all educators, it's a classic that gets quoted, but it's worth just pointing out now, is that when the question comes up, why is the word Bahalotcha, when you lift up, or you cause to rise up, is perhaps the best literal translation. You cause to rise up, it's a hifil. These lights, what does that mean? So one of the answers Rashi gives is, well, light them until they burn on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's the sort of, that's what we mean when we say we're giving light. It's not enough just to have the will to light the candle. It's not enough to light the candle and light the world. The light you shine needs to be so bright that it causes other people to catch fire.
Right.
And that's what you're saying also in the Pesach Sheni, because the reality is, to this very day, we're lit by their original will that there must be something more.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to see later on in the Saint Torah portion, Balotcha, that Moses is the kind of candle that lights other people without taking away from his flame.
Precisely.
Right. We're going to see that when it's time to incorporate 70 elders and give them some of his prophecy, he doesn't lose any of it, but they gain from it. And that's what a great man is. That's what a great man is. A great man is somebody who gives and only gets from that giving. By the
it's
way,
it's also an understanding of what greatness is, which is it's not something that you have and I don't. It's something that you've actualized and I have not yet.
Right. Very good. Speaking of actualization and great men and women, I want to dedicate the show today to Rabbi Norman Lamb. Yes. Alav Shalom, Dr. Rabbi Norman Lamb, who was the head of Yeshiva University. He was lost this week. He passed away at an old age this week. His wife also passed away about a month ago from COVID, and some people are speculating that he too fell to it. He had been under Alzheimer's for some years, but I remember him very well, and I had many an occasion to deal with him directly, and I was just a YU pipsqueak. Yeshiva University Pipsqueak, but I had a lot of opportunities to play ball with him.
He was president.
He was chancellor of YU, and I had a chance to cut it up with him a few times. And here's the famous story. Here's how it went. There was a dorm talk, and it was exactly when Joe Lieberman was running for VP. Who was he running with? I don't even remember. But anyway, he was running. He was running for Vice President of the United States.
Maybe.
Yecholiot, I don't know. Yecholiot, yeah. Was it okay?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Anyway, somebody, so he was running. Maybe somebody in the comments section will help us. And in case it was Lieberman. He was running. Joe Lieberman was running for VP, and he was singing his praise at this dorm talk in front of like 1,000 students. So I raised my hand and I said, but Rabbi Lamb. Aren't we supposed to have, don't we have our own country that we're supposed to have great political leaders of? Like, why would we want great political leadership in America? Oh, Shlomo says Al Gore. He was running with Al Gore. Okay.
Thank you.
So I said, shouldn't it be, right, he was a Democrat. What are we talking about? He wasn't with McCain, of course.
Right.
So I said, do we really want a great Jewish leader at the head of this country? If we have great Jewish leaders, then we should be the head of our country, Israel. So he says to me, he goes, this was in front of like 1,000 people. So he goes, Yishai. He goes, Yishai. He goes, do you really expect us all to just pack up our bags and go to Israel? I said, I thought that was the plan. Anyway, but we were all in good, it was all in good humor.
You've never changed, have you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, YU is where I cut my teeth originally. But in any case, but you know, I want you to know, by the way, it was in love. It was totally with love. People were laughing. It wasn't like this, like the way people talk today. It wasn't like that. It was like, I respect you as a great intellectual, and we're having a public discussion about something.
Yep.
But like, I think you're the greatest. You know, I don't agree always with you, but I think you're the greatest. And he passed away this week. So I just want to dedicate the show to him. Let's go quickly The trumpets. I wanted to ask you about this. The transition between shofar to trumpet. This week's Torah portion has a commandment to build trumpets, and you use these trumpets when the chips are down.
Yeah.
You got to call me. And this is my telephone number. It's these trumpets. You blow these trumpets and I shall hear you and I shall come to you when you need it. Right. So I was thinking to myself, like, why did we move? Let me just find it. Why did we move from shofar to trumpet? Mm-hmm. It says something to me about something moving from animal to metal.
I think most critically moving from something which is essentially made by God to something which is essentially made by man.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the shofar, of course, is manufactured. They take it off the animal, you got to drill a hole, etc. And of course, the shofarot are made by God in the sense that the metal, of course, but the process of giving them voice is very different. And I think it's part of the shift, which
the basic shape of a shofar is made by God.
Yeah.
But this thing, you're fashioning it out of a nodule of copper.
You're modifying, but these are silver in this case. But
silver. That's right.
But these, I think that it's very important in the sense of summoning Am Yisrael together to really cry out to God. That doesn't happen just like this. That there's a process of preparation of crafting,
right,
the people into a people, and the tools to give voice to our desires. That can't just be given to us by God. It has to be truly expressive of our own process.
So you're saying that a shofar is a kind of itaruta de la ela. It's a kind of godly awakening. And really the truth is that the shofar blasts heard at Sinai were a godly shofar blast. On the other hand, what about the shofar blast at Jericho? We'll have to fit that in.
You mean when the walls miraculously fell?
Right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say they're specifically indicative. In a partnership, there's always a shift of like junior to senior, or we'd say Ikar and Tafel, which I think is a better way of saying junior and senior, right? Primary and dependent, right? So I think the shofar represents the fact that God is taking the posture of Ikar, of the essential, and we are expressing, right? Whereas I think that the chatzotot, the trumpets, might represent the opposite shift, which God says, I want you to take the lead on this.
Right. I like that very much. I really like that a lot. I'm glad I asked that question. And I just want to say that that it's not just for negative stuff. It's also for moving the camps, right? Yep. Anyway, you have these blows and they move the whole camp together. And it says when you have a war in your land on the people who fight against you, blow these silver trumpets, and you shall be remembered in front of God, and you shall be saved because of that. And in your happy days, and in your gathering days, and in your new months, and in your certain korbanot, blow these things. Make a noise. And I like what you said, a noise that comes down from down up and not from up down. Okay, so that's another thing. Then we have the very famous, now Rabbi Mike, I know you're low on time, so let me put it to you this way. Due to the fact that you're low on time, if you have to go, you just say, Isha, I got to go, and then I'll just continue on the live stream without you, okay?
Okay, it's going to be about 5-10 minutes.
Fine, you got it, okay? Really, don't let me hold you up too much.
Got to see the doc.
That's right, okay? Only Briut. We have one of the most famous mini... You ever scroll down a website, and then in the middle of a website, there's like a scroll bar of something that they have, like, so right, you're scrolling.
You get caught in it. Scroll in the middle of the scroll.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So like, that's. I can't get out.
Right. I can't get out until I get to the bottom of the mini scroll and then it starts to scroll again. Okay. That's to me the mini Torah book that we have here within the our Torah portion. Literally we have what? Scroll. What's that?
Literally a mini scroll. Yeah,
that's right. A mini scroll. There you go. And that is the famous inverted nuns around two verses, which we say often, which we say three times a week. And the words are Vayibin Saron, when the Ark of the Covenant would travel, Vayomer Moshe would declare, Kuma Hashem, arise, O God, Vayafutsu Oyvecha, your enemies should be eviscerated. V'yanusu mis'anecha mipanecha, your haters.
Eviscerated.
Huh?
Eviscerated? That's an interesting...
Eviscerated because that's what it says about the...
Scattered.
Scattered. But it says also, like the mentor says, that you know it would kill the snakes and flatten the mountains. And
whoa.
All right. V'yafutsu...
Okay.
Fine, you're right. I guess I got it carried away. V'yafutsu... Ifutsu means scattered, correct?
Yeah, lapitz is to scatter something,
right? Vayanusu, but they will run before you, misanecha, your haters, which is a very interesting thing. Like God's got haters.
Yeah. Oh, God's got haters.
It's like just a few minutes ago, somebody on the show on a comment wrote something mean, and I like deleted that comment. You know, I'm like, I don't want negative comments on my Facebook page. So I'm like, God, why did you even put
a hater this way?
why do you have haters in your world?
Yeah.
Like why did God create a world with hate with his haters? He doesn't even hate the Jews, which is understandable. They hate God.
It's okay. Or certainly at least popular.
And then the next verse is, however, I'm adding the word however, benucho, when it rests, when the ark comes to rest, Yomar, Moses would say, or it was said, Shuva Hashem, like
return,
or from the word like sit, which is like
yeah, actually come to
nachat, like come to rest.
Shuva, what's the tuv Hashem?
No, he says Menachem Tegmol Lashon Margoa, like yeah, rest.
Yeah, I was looking at Onkelos, but yeah, Rashi says right Margoa, right?
Right, v'kem b'shuva
v'nachat to show.
Right.
Okay,
right, like rest, like rest. Rest God amongst, settle. What's that?
Settle, like the lashon of Yishuv.
Settle, that's right. When it was time to settle, he said, settle God, rest God, revivot of Israel, amongst the thousands of the people of Israel, the thousands of Israel.
Tens of thousands.
The tens of thousands. So the reason this verse is so interesting is because these two verses is because our sages tell us that basically this is a mini Torah scroll within the scroll. Within this book, and in some way, you could also say there are not five books of Moses, but rather seven, because this splits up this book into three, the one before, the one after, and this one. But in any case, the Musar movement folks say that this scroll means that all of our sojourns are written. All of the sojourns of the Jewish people, all of our individual sojourns are written. They're not written out for us to see, but they're in there. They're hidden in there. Or another way to say it is that God writes down what we're up to, and our stuff is seen, our journeys are seen, our tribulations are seen.
Listen, that is such an important thing to note. I had a conversation with someone just recently in the context of my counseling, and I think that it's important for everyone. And particularly for Am Yisrael to know, but I think every human being should know that you're never alone. What it means to be created in the image of God is that you are always seen, and therefore you're never alone. Now, on one hand, the reason I say it's important for Jews separately is because God's got some high expectations of Am Yisrael. So, like, just know, like, you ain't fooling people around you. You ain't fooling God. But on the deeper level, that sense, like you're saying, that it's written, that it's noted. Is that one of the greatest pains a person can feel in their life is that of being completely abandoned.
Yeah.
And we have a society that thrives on us, not them, you know, pushing people in the margins, et cetera. And you should just always know that God doesn't do that. Right. That you're never alone.
So in the book of Ruth, we have this scene where these three women who have all lost their husbands, right? Ruth, Naomi, and Orpah, they've all lost their husbands. They have no children. Naomi has lost children. And the Midrash says that they're walking barefoot because they're so poor, destitute, broken. And they've all lost, they were all much more glorious beforehand. They've all lost their stuff. And basically, they're three women losers walking on a dirt road, not here nor there, not in Moab and not in Beit Lechem. They're just three losers. And Rabbi Citron said to me one year, he said, and you see, God is writing every word that they say.
Yeah.
Every word that this
Mashiach comes from them.
Right. And Mashiach comes from it, but like every but like these people who are lost.
Yeah.
God is listening to every word and writing down every word. And yeah, so whatever station we have in life, we should never lose the fact that, as you said, God is with us, God is listening, and that things matter. Things matter even if you're not in the best station in life.
So listen, I think on that note, I'm going to hand things back off to you. I appreciate your flexibility.
Absolutely. Rabbi Mike Ford, before you go, let me call up your banner here for a second. Your stuff can be found, your other podcast, which is The Jewish Story, and your other work, which is also in counseling and teaching at the Pardes Institute, can be found at jewishstory.co.
Yeah,
and thank you so much.
We're rebuilding RavMike.com. So
we're looking forward to RavMike.com as well. We're looking forward to that. And thank you so much for joining us. And have a Matzliach day and a good Shabbos.
Amen. Good Shabbos.
Oh, I didn't get to wish you also a Gut Zimmer.
Gut Zimmer,
which is what Jews say when Shavuot comes around, or in Hebrew we say
Chorif.
Right, that's in Sukkos.
Yeah,
that's in Shmini Atzeret. You say a good Chorif, a good winter. But now we say a good Zimmer, which means a good summer. I want to wish you a good and healthy summer. And I know you're doing a lot of work through Zoom and through other stuff. And want to wish you a lot of success this good summer. Hopefully, a lot of health for your children, for yourself, and for all of us out there.
All right,
Rabbi Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to say goodbye to him, but you're sticking around with me. And I actually want to take a chance to go through your comments, which have added up here. Says Erica Nordstrom, I wish the leaders of Israel would put their trust in Hashem and not in other countries' opinions or decisions. Okay, so basically the same type of feeling, which is like, we can, we should. And God has given us so much strength and army and economy. This is the time not to be small about things, but to go large and to have faith. Luis says, treating people as problems is a category led to the final solution. Good point. Let's see. Stephen Brown wants to know, what about Har HaBayit? Good news, Stephen. Har HaBayit is reopened and Jews are going up there and praying. Maybe not praying out loud, but praying strong. My mom was already up there, so you could see the Jews are back. But, of course, we're not in full sovereignty on the very heart of our heartland, and it's time to go back up. Amir, my good friend, says, we delegate the responsibility of Arab residents at the time we surrendered their future to our own enemies. I'm not exactly sure what you mean, Amir, but I think what I understand is if we're going to be responsible for them in our land, we've got to take that responsibility and not try to pawn it off to create a Palestinian authority to deal with them. Z Corp Alpha says, okay, I got one for you. A Cuban cigar shop was attacked by riot people in Miami. Had nothing to do with the incident. What did he do to deserve this? This was his private business. Nobody, Z Corp, is saying in any way that anybody deserves to be looted, and certainly not decent and good businesses. Nobody. And I'm, you know what I mean? Let's be real. Anybody who says to you that the frustration therefore equals that people should do criminal acts is absurd. Oh, Amir explains. He says, we should never even recognize the PA as administrators of the Arabs. Not all Arabs are with the PA, and we never had to empower them. Absolutely. Okay. Let's see. Deborah says, fascinating discussion, especially about how looking to the approval of a patron U.S. to declare sovereignty is not good. I agree. Israel is a sovereign nation and should make its own decisions. Very good. Victoria Ann says, very nicely, appreciate your collective insight. Our good friend Yoel Karen calls up the beautiful verse about receiving of the Torah. Vehi kol shofar was the voice of the shofar, holech v'chazek me'od, went and was strengthened. Moshe yidaber, Moshe spoke, v'ha'elohim ya'anenu b'kol, and God answered him out loud. Okay, and my good sister Racheli Fleischer-Vinick says, beautiful words of Torah. So thank you so much, everybody. Let's keep going with a little bit more Torah. I know we've already been an hour through this, but let's do just a little bit more. Where did I stop? Oh, we have the issue. Here's our great, you see this book? This is the Rashi, Elucidated Rashi. And I wanted to talk a little bit about a group of people that had desire that was wanton. In this case, it seemed on the face of it to be about food, but it wasn't just about food. It was also about other desires. And that's really at the heart of the of this Torah portion's ending, which is the Asafsuf, the folks that gathered amongst the Jews, but maybe were the kind of Klingons, and I don't mean that in a Star Trek term. I mean the folks that came out of Egypt, Vasafsuf Asher Bekirbo, the Klingons who were amongst them, Hitavu Ta'ava. They had a deep desire. But the Hasidic masters explain that Hitavu Ta'ava means they had desire for desire. They were upset that the existence in the desert was one that when you ate the manna, you didn't have to go to the toilet because it was so perfect. And there was just nothing kind of extraneous. They were a little bit like babies within their mother's womb. They were being fed everything. And these people were like, wait, but I desire. I can understand that personally. I know where that's coming from. Sometimes you just get this desire, like, I want to live. I want to, you know, eat meat. I want to, you know, I want to not be limited by whatever limitations, religious, moral, and others. And sometimes you're like, what do I need all this, you know, morality? But that's what they're basically saying. They're like, we don't want to be limited by the morality of these systems anymore. We're tired of it. We want to break out, and we want to be very, very materialistic. We want to break out of this spiritual kind of world. One aspect of that is good. It's good to want to live. It's good to want to, you know, be part of the world as is. And a certain element of carpe diem is like an element of like succeed today, do great things today, move it ahead today, move the ball ahead. But another side is another side of it, which is probably the side of these people, is I don't want God's gifts. I don't want, because God's gifts come with God's limitations, and I don't want that. They say, why can't we go back to Egypt and get the stuff that we had chinam, which means free? What did we have for free? Well, they say leeks and melons and onions and garlic. But Rashi says, what is it that they had free? They weren't limited to get these blessings through the fulfillment of the commandments. They were getting to them because they were slaves. They were being fed. But they didn't have to accede to doing the Torah commandments in order to receive these blessings. And what the Torah is telling us is that sometimes you want the desires but not the limitations. Basically, you want anarchy, and that's the kind of people that we're seeing today also amongst the protesters. God says, okay, I will bring you this slav, this quail meat, and that's why we call the show today also Cloudy with a Chance of Quail. And that's because this Cloudy with a Chance of Quail means that God said, okay, you want meat? You're going to get so much of this world. It's going to fly in. It's going to Amazon right to your house, but you're going to eat it for 30 days until it proverbially comes out of your nose. Like, you're going to be so tired of eating this meat, because if you don't trust God for your diet, you want the stuff that you want, I'll feed it to you to the point that that's the only thing you'll have. You'll have it, and you'll understand by going to its excess. You'll understand what it really is, what the value of it is, which is really emptiness. It becomes nothing if you don't use it within its proper context. Moshe Rabbeinu also gets challenged. Moshe Rabbeinu says, this is a very important phrase, Moshe Rabbeinu kind of loses his confidence in being able to control these people. And God says, okay, bring 70 elders, and they shall get some of your prophecy power. You kind of hand it over to them a little bit, but you'll get to retain your power. You won't lose even a bit, but you'll get these 70 people to help you. And two of them say something. What is that something? And our sages tell us what they said is, Moshe is going to die, and Joshua is going to bring the Jewish people into the land of Israel. So this is the first moment where we hear that there's this kind of rebellion. People are against Moshe. He says, I need more help. And the message is, looks like you're not going to bring in the Jewish people to the land of Israel. There's something here that's like, whoa, Like the minute I ask for help, it's like, I can't do it anymore. I can't do the full mission. So there's something kind of painful about that. But Moshe Rabbeinu, in his amazing heights, when he hears this prophecy, his servant says, how about we arrest them, stop them, throw them out of the camp? And he says, it should only be that all the Jewish people should have this kind of prophecy. May they all be prophets. That's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm not looking to be the all-out leader. I'm looking to be a conduit, a channel of blessing. And if there's other channels, wonderful, because I'm here to be a servant of God. And if the news is that I'm not going in, I can accept that as long as the Jewish people are all on a higher level. That's fine. And then finally, there is this moment where God says, I'm going to feed these people this meat that they want. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, well, where are you going to get them? Even if you slaughter all the animals that we have, you're not going to be able to feed all of them. And then God says this very amazing word. He says, "Ata tire." Now you shall see. Excuse me, I missed the line. He says, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe." Very important phrase. God says to Moshe, "Hayad Hashem tiktzar." Will the hand of God be shortened? Ata, now, tire, you shall see. Hayikrecha devari imlo. You shall see if my stuff, my words, come to fruition or if not. Now, for me, this is a very important phrase. Why do I have such an interest in this phrase? Because I think that in the early, watch me shift topics to something completely different but related. In the early days of Zionism, there were great rabbis, including Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who did not understand how it could be that the Jewish people would be ingathered into the land of Israel, but still be relevant on the world stage. Because Israel, this area, Palestine, Maghreb, the Levant, it was all considered backwater places. So he said, but we're so important here in Germany. How could it be that if we go down to the Middle East, we'll continue to have our importance, we may lose it? And proverbially, I like to think that God said to Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, shall the hand of God be shortened? Now you shall see how my words come to fruition. And the way that they've come to fruition is through the ingathering of the exiles, which at the very same moment of the ingathering has also seen the communications revolution and the globalism revolution. The more the Jews, this is the mystery, the more that Jews come to their small place here in the Middle East, the more they're touching the world, maybe more than ever before. So the more we're kind of a small ingathered people, the more we're touching and effectuating the world, and that's because of this communications revolution. So that's, to me, God saying to Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, shall the hand of God be shortened? No, believe me, I can get it done. I can bring them in and affect the world at the same time. That, to me, is something amazing. And very finally, very, very finally here, is the famous story of Miriam, where Miriam speaks mildly, badly about Moses, saying, Moshe Rabbeinu saying, hey, aren't we also prophets? Why did he leave his wife? We were not commanded to leave our spouses. We were not allowed to. We were not commanded to refrain from marital relations. Why is he different? And the answer is that God says, in his anger, he says, my servant Moses is different. He's different. I see him face to face. He speaks to me whenever he wants to. He's on a different level. He doesn't see me through messages and certain moments and dreams and epileptic fits and kind of like small touches. We're in touch all the time. He's a different kind of receiver than the rest of you, even though you, Miriam, and you, Aaron, are very high. It's a different level. And Miriam gets struck with leprosy. She gets struck with a leprosy. Moshe Rabbeinu immediately prays for her. El na refana la. Hashem, please heal her. Beautiful, beautiful poetic words that Moshe Rabbeinu, in a moment of crisis, comes out. El na. Oh God, please refana. Please heal her. Rufana Allah, please heal her. That's a kind of a powerful request, and she gets sent to 7 days of being outside of the camp until she gets brought back in. So what we see here is a whole Torah portion where people with wanton desires and they're angry at Moses. God is angry at them. We see that we have some people who are prophesying that Moses is dying, and another in his own family saying something untoward about him. On the one hand, on the other hand, we see the menorah, the leadership of the Maccabees. We see the folks of the Pesach Sheni, the second Passover. We see the folks of the silver trumpets, making the silver trumpets and blowing them and calling out to God from our world to his, for him to come down and save us and celebrate with us. And so we have a very powerful Torah portion. In the middle of it is this section called Kuma, which is arise. It's not a coincidence that that the organization that I helped create is called Kuma, K-U-M-A-H. And our motto has always been, here it is, building Israel together, building Israel together. And whenever you go to my websites, if you want to donate and be part of building Israel together and keeping on and broadcasting Israel, then when you go to yishaifleischer.com/donate, and now we have all kinds of donating options. We're going to add them, but you can use your Venmo and you can use your credit card and you can use your all these different pay options, everything that we got to match you. Our motto and our efforts have always been to build Israel together, to build Israel together. I have the great zchut also to work for the Jewish community of Hebron, and I would love to see you visiting soon at Marat HaMachpelah. Those of you who can't fly in, you know, when the situation allows itself, would love to see you back. And those who live in Israel, the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matrix is open. Reach out to us through hebronfund.org, and we'd love to tour you in the land, hopefully in health and in success. Our Torah portion is Baalotcha. I really hope that you guys all have a wonderful Shabbat Shalom Umevorach. Let me just see if there's any other comments that have come in. Oh, Dan Mastery says, I am building godly vessels, temples to serve God. You build the neshama to fill the holy vessels. Thank you, Dan, and God bless you. Miss you very much. And Jordan says, what's with her father spitting in her face comment by the Lord? Yeah, very, Jordan, you're talking, of course, about Miriam at the end when there's a prayer for her to be healed. God says, yes, she will be healed, but first she has to be in quarantine because she's outside of the camp. And my only thought to you about this particular phrase, which is that it says that God says, and if a father should spit in a daughter's face, shall she not be embarrassed? My only thinking is about this that I want to add to you, Jordan, is that fathers have a deep connection to daughters. Fathers have a very deep connection to daughters. And so something happened there with Miriam that she who saved Moses somehow angered God with relationship to his servant Moses. And my only thought about this is that God has a very sensitive place when it comes to Miriam. And so Miriam, when she agitated him, there's this moment. And the great lesson is the lesson of Lashon Hara. We have to try, all of us, to use our mouth and our tongue and our lips better in terms of speaking properly, not speaking negatively about other people, not giving the prosecuting angel any power by not speaking. When we don't speak negatively about people, the prosecuting angel doesn't have that ability either. And somehow Miriam reminds us of that. She's done us a great service about reminding us about how God hates when we speak negatively, especially about the righteous people, especially about the great people. Okay, folks, thank you so much for being with me. And I want to wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Of course, you can email me, Yishai@YishaiFleischer.com. Love to hear from you. V'efshar gam be'ivrit, lo rak be'anglit. You can write to me in Hebrew. Можно тоже по-русски. You can write to me in Russian, although I don't read Russian so great, but you can write to me in Russian. And you can write to me actually in anything, because today the internet allows us to be able to, with one click of a button, read any language. So if you want to write to me in the language of your country, that's not a problem. And I am sending you my blessings from the land of blessings, from Judea, from Zion, from Jerusalem, from the forefathers and mothers in Hebron. I'm sending you blessings for peace, for inner peace, for safety, from people who are violent, from a disease that's trying to strike at us, and from Lashon Hara, from thinking bad thoughts about others, including our leaders. Let us try, friends, to bless our leaders. Bless our leaders. Let us try to find right now a time of speaking well about other people and about ourselves. And since there's so much out there that's destructive, let's be a counter force to that. And let's be a force of blessing, a channel of goodness. That's what I've decided about myself. Whenever I think a bad thought, I say, I'm supposed to be a channel of good energy, not a channel of bad energy. We're supposed to be channels of light into this world. So Jordan says, bless you back, buddy. Bless you, buddy. God bless you, all of you guys. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Lots of love from the land of Israel and Shalom.
The Land of Israel Network is your connection to Israel and the Jewish world. Listen to our show hosts, Ari Abramowitz, Jeremy Gimpel, Eve Harrow, Josh Haston, Shlomo Katz, Mike Foyer, Yishai Fleischer, and more. Keeping you up to date on news, politics, and spirituality, that's the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Broadcasting the truth and beauty of Israel to the world.